The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. If you knew what the prophecies say about our United States of America in the next 9, 10, 12 years, if you knew what was foreseen ahead by people, the Club of Rome, some of the think tanks, the intelligentsia, the big universities in the United States and elsewhere about dwindling energy resources, about the long-range dangers of growing proliferation of nuclear reactors and nation after nation joining the nuclear club, about the prospect of famines on our doorstep, the prospect of the energy crisis continuing not just because of an Arab oil embargo, but because of increasing shortages to the United States as well as other major countries around the world. If you knew about changing patterns of weather, about their worrying about the monsoon coming later and perhaps shifting southerly, as vast areas of India and the periphery of southeastern Asia depend entirely upon that monsoon for their very survival. If you knew, in short, what is projected ahead for the next 10 years or so in the world as a whole, you might be so perplexed you would think there is simply no way out of it. You may not realize that the major events today are literally fulfilling prophecies of centuries ago. That right now, as you see the almost incredible repetition of history between those years just prior to the beginning of World War II, where the major nations of Europe and the United States were in the midst of spiraling inflation, which brought about serious depression that sent the entirety of the world, the Western world at least, into terrible joblessness, a depression that it was unlike anything we had ever experienced before that led directly to World War II. You may not have caught some of the major networks' programs on these very problems of recent date. I believe it was Eric Severide that did a very in-depth expose on this very problem of the seeming repetition of history, of how there has never been so much governmental travel between countries. Never have so many governments toppled in so short a period of time. Never have there been such vying, struggling for position between trading partners, or the breakup of old alliances and the formation of new power blocks and new treaty or trading organizations. And never has there been such a great confidence crisis in government itself. If you look then at the overview of what is happening in the world today and wonder what is the ultimate outcome, there is only one source to which you can go to get any meaning whatsoever for the conditions in today's world news. And that source is Bible prophecy. The Bible, a book that most of you ignore, that may occupy a place in an old bureau, a chest of drawers, or down at the bottom of a cedar chest, or perhaps not even in your home. Except in many cases, of course, where people do have an interest in the Bible. They may read the Bible, study the Bible, go to church. Those are perhaps the exception to the rule. The broad majority of our general public simply is not really reading the Bible. They can't understand it if they do. If they read prophecy or prophetic segments of the Bible, it sounds like a lot of beasts and many headed creatures with many horns and women doing this and that and some numbers or marks and something rising out of the sea, dragons, stars falling from heaven, a third of the waters turning to blood, a lot of strange language about apocalyptic dream world type of visions that some old fella saw way back there centuries ago that doesn't seem to make any sense whatsoever. And so most people just don't bother reading it. Those who read it don't always understand it. Those who understand it might get it wrong. Some of those who read and understand what they think they're reading don't believe what they read. So the levels of understanding of Bible prophecy can vary very wildly one from another. I have said constantly that the Bible is the handbook from the Creator God who does exist to us, His creatures, that explain where we're going and what is ahead. What is life after all and what is death? What is this life all about? Just experience? Impressions, education, work, play, frustration, love, hate, emotion, loneliness, sickness, accident, disease, more work, more frustration, senility, loss of some of the vitality and the energy you enjoyed as a youth, and final waiting for death in maybe some home somewhere, or perhaps on some meager, below any really adequate level kind of a pension that you were locked into because you're a World War II veteran or you had a job way back when you retired on when your dollars at least might have got you by then, but today the dollar doesn't stretch anywhere near as much because inflation has eroded it away, and so now you find yourself on a hand-to-mouth existence where you can scarcely afford to even buy white bread, let alone some of the rest of the things you have to live on, which aren't even good for you. Is that what life is all about? A meaningless merry-go-round where it seems everybody and anybody takes advantage of you, and you end up wondering whether or not the kids are ever even going to bother calling, writing, let alone come for a visit? Too many millions of people are futilized, a word I've coined, meaning completely turned off and frustrated with life itself because they don't see what life is all about. They're not sure what death is all about. They don't know why they are here, where they came from. And I don't mean their parents. I mean the human race and their great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers and way on back into history. And so they never bother trying to find out because they simply accept all of these unanswerables in their minds and their lives. Well, what about starting at the beginning? That's what the Bible does. It starts at creation. And it's the only logical answer. It's the only intelligent answer. Your mind has to be filled with various unknowns which you simply leave there. You never toy or tamper with those. You just leave them alone because the great indefinable, the great insoluble, the great unanswerable questions of who are you and why are you here and what is your personal life all about and what about the day of your death and what happens then and is there any purpose in your humdrum day-to-day existence beyond the fulfillment of certain human experiences and the satisfying of certain limited human appetites or is it bigger and more grand on scale than that? Is there some purpose or plan that you yourself have in store for you that is bigger than just your own private little niche in life? Most of us have to leave that question alone because we don't know where to go to get the answer. Well, we would if we knew the Bible is God's handbook to His own creation, that it's the manufacturer's manual on how the thing works. When you go to buy an airplane, you'll find it has a manual. It tells you all about that airplane. It shows you diagrams and exactly how all the systems work. It shows you how to turn on the engines. It tells you how those engines work. It tells about oil and oil pressure and oil temperature. It talks about manifold pressure and RPM. It talks about the kind of fuel you need to run it and the kind of oil and about pre-start and preheating the engine in cold temperature. It gives you an elevation that's an absolute maximum you can operate out of. It talks about balanced field length and about the rate of lift over drag, meaning the number of hundreds or thousands of feet it takes you to get the thing in the air and exactly what it's going to do over a 50-foot obstacle at the end of the airfield. It tells you how to get the gear down if they're hydraulically operated and even gives you a diagram, a schematic to help you understand that. It gives you loading and weight and balance information so you don't put too much weight too far aft and get the center of gravity, or they call it CG, all out of whack, and try to take off and simply put your nose up and stall out and crash and kill yourself. Well, is there any handbook for you as a human being? I'm not talking about just somebody tells you how to keep from getting fat, or how to sleep better, or how to quit smoking, or how to make more money. I mean the whole answer to the whole bit about what you are and how you ought to live life and how to live it to the full and be really fulfilled and rewarded in life and get the best out of life. Well, unless you turn to a psychology book that usually admits to asking more questions than it gives answers, you don't know of any book that is the handbook about humanity, unless it's the Bible. Well, that's what the Bible really is, and Bible prophecy is really the outline of the entire purpose in humanity from the beginning of time down to the end of time, so far as the way man measures time. Bible prophecy includes a lot of prophecies already fulfilled, like those that had to do with the collapse of the Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, the Greco-Macedonian Empire, and Alexander the Great, who is mentioned not by name, but by his own position. And the four generals who carved up his kingdom are mentioned by the jobs they held. And there are dramatically intricate prophecies fulfilled down over the course of centuries. There's the case of Cyrus of the Persian Empire, who is mentioned by name. Some of the fulfilled prophecies include the building of the temple, the first coming of Jesus Christ, the exact manner of his beginning ministry, of his death, the way he would die, the length of time in the tomb, the fact of his resurrection. There are the former prophecies and the latter prophecies. There are prophecies that were fulfilled and those that are yet to be fulfilled. And prophecy talks of our time, the day in which we live right now. You're left with a simple question every single time you look at a Bible prophecy, such as Jesus' own statements in Matthew 24 about wars and rumors of wars, of drought and famine. You're left with a simple question. Either this is true or it is not. If it is not, then you can't trust any of the Bible. And if you can't trust any of the Bible, that means the statements about prayer, or the statements about salvation, or the statements about belief in an acceptance of Christ and of His sacrifice. So what I'm saying is, I guess, in essence, that if you are even a professing Christian, if you're a church-going person who claims to believe in any of the Bible at all, you've got to accept Bible prophecy. It doesn't make a bit of sense for you not to believe in prophecy when Jesus was the greatest prophet of all, who gave the key to Bible prophecy. The very pivotal point of prophecy is found in Matthew 24. That's where it all falls into shape. And he is talking of a time which he dates not by year, but by trends, by circumstances, and by conditions. He talks of a time where, except God would intervene, humankind could be obliterated. And there's never been such a time until today. Now we're dealing with the proliferation of nuclear weapons, at least the potential for manufacturing nuclear weapons in countries all over the world. We're dealing now with the fact of the use of lasers, which can greatly speed up the process of getting radioactive plutonium to be used in dirty and so-called cheap atomic devices which can be exploded as bombs. We're talking of the time of the population explosion, of the crossover between the number of mouths there are to feed and the amount of food grains there are to put into them, which means that from now on the human race is on the downward slide over the hill and headed toward oblivion eventually unless something is done, and that something is not in the foreseeable future. It has nothing to do with trying to farm the seas or the Amazon jungle or any of the other methods that we've talked about in our agriculture booklet, which you can have if you would like, about the cherished excuses of science bailing us out at the last moment from the food versus population crisis, which is going to take the lives of literally millions of human beings and bring about vast food wars of hundreds of millions populous countries such as India, China, and the like, in the near future, in your time, in our day, unless it can be averted. When Jesus said there would come a time of wars and rumors of wars, of nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom, implying empires or power blocks or military alliances or trading combines against each other, as well as kingdoms meaning a different form of government, a time of famines, which we are already now into. Witness Africa, the whole central belt of the major part of that vast continent of Africa, where tens of thousands, untold, uncounted numbers of human beings have died and are dying as we talk about it now. Pestilences, the beginning of disease epidemics, earthquakes in different places. Those are the words of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. They say Christ is the answer. They talk about receive Jesus. They have billboards on the sides of highways and roads here and there that says, are you ready to meet the Lord? Or Christ is coming soon. But what about all of the fantastic things he said would occur as trends, as conditions of what he called signs? Signs that people ought to watch for along the way that would herald the fact of his imminent return to the earth. Why is it so many people pay almost no attention to those major headlines Jesus announced in advance, and yet say they believe in his second coming? It's hard to figure how it is people cannot believe they are living in the close of an age. All you've got to do is to pick up any newspaper, read any newspaper or news magazine, listen to any news broadcast, and you say the world is going to pot. You say the country is going down the drain. You say there isn't very much hope anywhere you look. And that's about what everybody says. And everybody's right. That's exactly right. The world's going to pot and the country's going down the drain, and nobody seems to be doing much about it. Well, you know, Jesus said that would happen. But he said those who are watching, and those who are part of a last-ditch effort to save human life and a part of a great program that Jesus himself predicted would occur when he said, this gospel, this good news of the kingdom, a coming government of God, shall be preached in all the world for a witness, that's a warning, a witness, unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Now people say, I preach the end of the world. I don't do any such a thing. Never did, never will, because the prophecies of your Bible say the world's going to go right on. They don't talk about the end of the world, they talk about the end of an age. Now, you've seen the end of an age. the end of 2 or 6 or 10 ages. Some of you that are up into your 70s have probably lived through about 5 separate ages. You lived on into the development, pretty much, of the machine age. And then you have lived on into and seen develop since your birth, and in your lifetime, if you're in your 70s, the age of flight. You've lived on over into the atomic age, or the nuclear age. Then you entered into the space age. The age of flight has been replaced by the jet or the rocket age. And now we've seen the dawn of a new age in the world, and that's the age of famine, the age of overpopulation. I guess the way you define it might vary, but really, in many historical senses, those of you that are 65 or 70 or above have lived through about 5 or 6 or 7, depending on how you count it, ages in your own lifetime. My father, who is still very much active and very much alive and energetic, who has been conducting campaigns in world capitals and has been visiting kings and leaders, was alive as a boy when the Wright brothers flew at Kitty Hawk. Now, when I went to the Air Force Museum at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base over there in Ohio, and I saw some of those ancient old Curtiss Jennies and some of the ancient old attempts of man to fly, and saw some of those old pictures, that's like looking at ancient history. That's not ancient history. My dad was a boy out trapping gophers when some of that was going on. He's still alive right now today and being taken to his meetings overseas in a modern jet airplane. So he's lived through many, many ages. And yet he's only about 83 years of age. Only about, well, maybe that's one way to say it. That's the way he put it, I think. Only about 83. Well, you know, if you're up in your 70s or 80s, you've got something in common. You have lived through several ages. Now, Jesus said the time would come when, unless God would intervene, there wouldn't be a man, woman, or child left alive. For any human being to propose prior to the explosion of the atomic bomb in August of 1945 in Hiroshima and Nagasaki that human life could become extinct on this planet would have sounded like the most addle-headed weirdo you'd ever heard of in all your life. But from the dawn of the atomic and then the hydrogen age, it became more and more universally understood that mankind now actually does have the capacity to exterminate human life. That's why I say Jesus baited Matthew 24. Because he said in verse 21, "Then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no nor ever shall be." So that's totally without precedent. And he said in verse 22, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved." Now, Moffat's version adds the word alive, which is obviously implied, even in the old archaic King James version from which I read now, that unless those days would be cut short, that is, trends and human conditions halted and stopped short of global nuclear war, or at least short of the total outcome of that war, which could be extermination of humankind, he said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But he said there would be an elect on the earth. He said there would be people that are called God's elect. In several places in the book of Isaiah, he talks about his own elect. Mine elect, he calls them. Those who were elected, that is, specially chosen for a job, a calling, and a commission. And he said, for the sake of those days would be shortened. He would not allow it to happen. So I don't preach the end of any world. I preach the end of an age, the end of man's government, the end of man's kingdoms and empires and of man's own military pacts and trading alliances and agreements and power blocks and the like, the end of man's muddling, bumbling, futile attempts to govern himself in either direct defiance of, or at least ignorance of, God and God's government, which has brought about all of the conditions that we see in the world today. Leaders of governments in country after country might be mass murderers, liars, cheats, thieves, grafters, hypocrites, opportunists, despots. They might be almost anything you could say, and yet they are leaders of countries, sometimes of up into the millions of human beings. And they get where they are by all sorts of devious means, and they stay there sometimes by vast purges, by obliterating and annihilating everybody that disagrees with them, Oh, the machine guns and the rifles were crackling away down at the violent overthrow in Chile. They were herding people by the hundreds into some of the big sports stadiums and simply cutting them down. And eyewitness accounts came out of there after that bloodiest of recent revolutions. You know what happened in Cuba at the takeover of Castro so many years ago when they leapt into the arms of the bright young champion that promised them all the deliverance and the great system of liberating all the poor peasants and giving them their own farms, only to find out they had leapt from the arms of a fascistic dictator into the arms of a communistic dictator who was probably several times worse. Man's government has never succeeded. Which war is it that ended all war? Was it World War II? That's what it was billed as. That was the advance advertising. To all of the guys who went overseas with all those little epistles of John and editions of the Psalms in their breast pocket. And that was that we're fighting to make the world safe for democracy. And we're fighting the war to end all war. And what we're going to do is to insist that aggressive and hostile nations can never again prepare the foundation of the machinery to even build up an armaments industry that could give them the capacity for waging war against smaller and more helpless states. Did we do that? Well, there have been more than 50 wars since World War II, in which additional millions have died, the largest of which have been Korea and Vietnam, which the United States has been directly involved in. So it doesn't look like that advance billing was exactly honesty in advertising, does it? World War II did not end war. It was, in a sense, the beginning of the potential of nuclear war. Now, eventually, between 8, 10, 20, 40, or more nations. Well, Bible prophecy deals with these times. How could the Bible talk about tiny little countries around the Middle East, such as Libya, Ethiopia, Syria, and Egypt, and leave out the giant superpowers possessing the capacity for the extermination of the human race, such as the United States, the Soviet Union, China, and so on? Well, it doesn't leave them out. They are identified, indelibly identified in Bible prophecy. Now, I've got a book that I want to tell you about for a few moments, but to get you a kind of an outline on it and to understand what prophecy is all about and how to understand it. And that's the title of the book, How to Understand Bible Prophecy. Because the major events that will be the headlines you will be reading in the next few months and years are already indelibly outlined in the pages of your own Bible. All you've got to do is to know where to look and what the biblical prophecies mean. Actually, the word prophet or prophecy can mean in the New Testament an inspired sermon, an inspired speech. It can mean more than just a prediction of events. So a prophet is one who speaks for God. There are a lot of common misconceptions about biblical prophets that you'll see explained in this booklet on how to understand prophecy, who they were, whether they were all ancient old fellows with long flowing beards, or whether some of them were teenagers who looked just about exactly like anybody else of their day and age, whether they were volunteers or whether they were chosen, drafted, sometimes forced into their jobs by a combination of circumstances. You'll see all of that. You'll understand why prophecy was ever written and what some of the prophetic symbols are. When you read in the book of Daniel, for example, about this strange, great, big statue, you read about the fiery furnace, you read about the example of Nebuchadnezzar who had everybody at the kind of a little cacophony of sound they set up with this tiny little band they got going in some of the corner streets there of the city, and everybody had to bow down, and how Daniel wouldn't do it, and what was about to happen. This lengthy 11th chapter of Daniel, the 12th chapter, that talks about mysterious lengths of days and why it is that Daniel says that he is told to go and close up the prophecy and seal it until the time of the end because people weren't supposed to understand it. How do you understand that book when even the fellow who wrote it didn't get what it meant? Well, believe it or not, there was a time limit, and there was a specific statement in the book of Daniel that when many would run to and fro, and knowledge would be increased, that the prophecies of that book would be opened to human understanding. And you have never seen a time of greater travel, of more frantic running to and fro, with up to a quarter of the American private public moving every single year. I tell you, in our own situation, of keeping a mailing list of this magazine, The Plain Truth, and other magazines and booklets we send out, I'll tell you, it takes full-time help just to keep track of the changes of address because so many tens of thousands of people on our own mailing list move every single year. Heads of state, government leaders, people traveling back and forth and up and down the length and breadth of the world continually, certainly that statement that many would go and rush to and fro is being fulfilled as never before. The statement, knowledge shall be increased. Well, now we're in the age of the computer, the age of the knowledge explosion, the age where a medical doctor, for example, could go to school full time and never begin to keep up with the advances in his own specialized field. The age where people in technical fields couldn't even begin to touch one-tenth of the technical journals and papers and magazines available for their own tiny technical field to begin to keep abreast of it. And so specialization has become ever more proliferated and intricate. It becomes almost impossible for people in some of the highly technical fields of our modern technology, in the field of aerospace and avionics and communications and so on, to simply keep up with what is going on. We're in the midst of a knowledge explosion where more than 90% of all scientists who have ever walked this earth are alive right now, today. Well, then the time has come for the prophecies of Daniel, of the Revelation, of Jesus in Matthew 24, and of obscure books like Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Hosea and Obadiah to be opened to the minds of human beings. Now, this booklet on how to understand prophecy shows you how, in an orderly, step-by-step fashion, to understand these prophetic time lapses, the fact that prophecies are dual, and what prophetic symbolism is all about, how the Bible interprets itself, what some of the common symbols of prophecy are. You'll see a picture of a strange painted helicopter, and a picture of a scorpion, and statements out of the book of Revelation that talk about things that have power to sting or hurt men out of their tails. And what about some of the horrifying weaponry of modern warfare, of hovercraft, of tanks that can swim the bottoms of rivers, or of hovercraft that can skim right over rugged hills, and flamethrowers and the like being used in some of those modern machines of war, and whether or not that really is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy? Now, there are two ways you can get this. You can call right now to 800, that's the toll-free prefix in place of the area code, 800-423-4444, and request this booklet on prophecy, how to understand prophecy. If you're in the state of California, just go ahead and write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, for your free copy of the booklet, How to Understand Prophecy, and also request the current number of the Plain Truth. You'll be very, very up to the moment when you read that, because it shows you what is going to happen in the light of Bible prophecy. Free of charge, no price. You can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, or you can dial right now to the toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's everywhere except in California, Alaska, and Hawaii. Otherwise, if you live in one of those states, you would have to call the number Area 213, and the number is 577-5225. That's any resident of California, Alaska, or Hawaii. If you want to call right now, dial the number 213. That's the area. The number is 577-5225. The toll-free number for all other parts of the United States is 800-423-4444. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong. Oh, yes, and will you please tell us the call letters of your radio station? Please do that. We'd like to know the name of the radio station to which you're listening. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123.